Hello, and welcome to the Bookshelf Conversation, the podcast segment of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors, artists, musicians, filmmakers, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture, because that's our slogan. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here.
I get up each morning, dust off my wits, open the paper, read the obits. If I'm not there, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a good breakfast and go back to bed.
So that was my way of introducing our next Bookshelf Conversation guest, Richard Goldstein. Richard is an obit writer for the New York Times who seems to specialize in baseball players, both famous and relatively obscure. And I've always had a fascination with obituaries, and I check the paper every day, and I haven't seen my name yet. So without further ado, here's our Bookshelf Conversation with Richard Goldstein. Richard Goldstein, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Hi, thanks very much, Ron. Glad to be with you.
So every time, unfortunately, every time I read an obituary from about a baseball person, I check the byline. And more often than not, yours is the name at the New York Times who reports on these gentlemen and I guess the occasional lady. How did that fall into your lap?
Okay, I began writing for the obit section in approximately 1999. I was working as an editor in the Times Sports Department. And I had always had an interest both in history generally and in pretty much all sports. I grew up in Brooklyn, was an inveterate Dodger fan. And the sports editor knew that I had the special interest in sports history. And at that time, the obits department was looking to beef up its advance obituaries. The Times now probably has over 1,000 advance obituaries. So they asked me if I wanted to write for the section part-time, doing advances and occasional spot pieces. You know, when somebody died, that they didn't have an advance for them. So I started doing that, and the majority of the pieces I've written have been on sports figures, but I've also written quite a few obits on military figures, many of them Medal of Honor winners, and actually the space program as well. I've done a number of pieces on astronauts. But as I say, most of my pieces have been on sports, and a lot of them on baseball.
Do you have any idea how many you've done?
Well, possibly 900 or so. Wow. Or since the year 2000. About 200 of them are advances where the people are still alive. And I many times when a person passes away, it does need some updating if they've done anything in the years since I've written the piece. Generally, the pieces are for, first of all, of course, for prominence, and secondly, age. Usually, you know, pursue an advance on somebody until they're at least in their late 70s, unless they're known to be seriously ill.
Now, when you say advance, that means you're doing the legwork ahead of time, so as soon as the unfortunate time comes, you're ready to go with it.
Right, exactly.
Now,
In today's journalism, it's important to speed, not just for print considerations. You know, it used to be if, say, somebody passed away, it would be in the next day's Times print section. But now, if you get word on somebody, say, 10 o'clock in the morning, and paper's not going to go to press until 8, 9 o'clock at night, they like to want to get it on the website as soon as possible, and then it'll go into print.
Then you mentioned you do advance obituaries on prominent people, but some of the people, like especially the most recent ones that I've seen, are not necessarily names that, I mean, you certainly have talked about Joe DiMaggio when you've written an obituary on Charlie Silvera, who was Yogi Berra's backup catcher for almost a decade. What goes into the decision of, for, with all due respect,
those secondary figures. Like, oh, you
okay,
also
well,
did one on Pumpsy
yeah,
Green.
That's a good question. I'd like to do pieces, and also I'm encouraged to do that, where there's a kind of special angle or an offbeat aspect to it. I mean, Silvera was interesting, and here's a guy who got into very few games and yet kept collecting a World Series check that sometimes would come close to equaling his yearly salary. And he didn't seem to mind that very much, and it was kind of a quirky thing to write. For example, I did a piece once on a fellow named Frenchie Bordigeret, mm-hmm. who played for the Brooklyn Dodgers in the 1930s, who was the first player to have had a mustache in the baseball of its time. Of course, the ball players from years before had beards and mustaches. Mm-hmm. But then they all became clean-shaven, and it was very much remarked upon that here's this guy with a mustache. He also wasn't a bad baseball player. Another example of, say, something that would be an offbeat thing would be I did an obit, which actually was written as an advance on Randy Jackson, who's a third baseman for mm-hmm. the Cubs and the Dodgers, who hit the last home run ever hit by a Brooklyn Dodger player. It came in the last game of the Dodgers last year in Brooklyn, 1958, in Philadelphia. So he was a pretty good ball player, but the peg on that was the guy who hit the last home run for the Dodgers. Another example might be a fellow named Chet Huff, who died at 108, and he apparently was the lived longer than any other baseball player at the time, and he had pitched for an okay career, but nothing special. Pitching for the Yankees when they were the Highlanders, and played up on in Washington Heights, where Columbia Presbyterian Hospital is now. So this was a piece on him, basically written because he had far outlasted anyone else who had played Major League Baseball.
That reminds me of the joke of the newspaper interviewing a very, very old person. They said, "So what do you attribute your old age?" And he answers, "To the fact that I haven't died yet."
I remember a piece that I really loved that was from The New Yorker. It was a cartoon, and it shows this woman basically holding up some old man who seemed very feeble, and they were at a cocktail party. And she says, "This is Mr. Stevenson. He's the subject of a widely anticipated obituary."
So, yeah, I guess you have to have a sense of humor when you're dealing with death so much.
Well, I try, as long as it's in good taste. You know, as one thing I might mention is the difference between an obituary article and a eulogy. In a eulogy, you're always saying nice things. You want to comfort the family and friends. But in an obituary article, it's really a news piece, so you have to bring out warts and all. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's kind of hard to think of something positive about a figure. You know, one piece that comes to mind is on Marge Schott, mm-hmm. of course, became infamous for her remarks that were perceived as not pro-Nazi, certainly insensitive remarks about Hitler. He was good in the beginning, whatever. And she had those St. Bernards that she'd have on the field during batting practice, and they'd leave their little presents that full players would have to try not to step on. So I did an obituary on her. It was, in fact, written in advance. So I was looking for something positive to say, because pretty much everybody has something good about their lives. So I noted the fact that she had been a major contributor, a benefactor of the Cincinnati Zoo.
Mm-hmm. All right, whatever it takes.
Another joke that's nothing to do with exactly with obituaries. The story about Mr. Jones was a terrible person. Everybody hated him. So they had to have an eulogy of some sort at the funeral. So the guy says, "I'll do it." So he gets up there and he says, "His brother was worse."
So of all the obituaries you've done, which one would you say... You didn't do the one on Jim Bowden, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay. What was the biggest
or most famous baseball personality that you've written about?
Well, I've done quite a few Hall of Famers. I had a co-byline on Ted Williams. I did Bob Feller. I have advances in the hopper on pretty much all the members of the Baseball Hall of Fame who passed the age of 80.
So I'm sure you have on Hank.
Yeah, and I've also done pieces on quite a few notable figures in the military. For example, General Benjamin Davis Jr., who was the leader of the Tuskegee Airmen of World War II, mm-hmm. who broke racial barriers in the segregated Air Force, and I did a piece that I found what I thought was an interesting subject on, may not have been, well, he was very well known, but not in the category, super famous, Joe Rosenthal, who did who took the picture of the flag waving on Iwo Jima.
Right, that's an iconic
green flag waving. Recently I had a piece on a fellow named Richard Cole, who was the co-pilot of Jimmy Doolittle in the Doolittle raid over Tokyo in early 1942. That was considered a major chapter in Air Force history. It was a retaliation in a small degree, but it buoyed the home front months after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And he was the last of the 60 Doolittle Raiders to pass away. It was kind of interesting in that he was flying alongside Jimmy Doolittle in the lead plane.
So you are a lifelong baseball fan, grew up in Brooklyn. Do you ever have any special feelings when you come across people that you used to watch as a kid or that you have a more personal connection with? Does that ever play into it?
I wouldn't say I have a personal connection, but definitely I'm particularly interested in doing obits on Brooklyn Dodger figures of my youth. The first memory I actually have of ever meeting a player was, and the people of a certain age would remember this place, was at the Lois Pitkin movie theater in Brooklyn. I saw on Pitkin Avenue, which was sort of the Champs-Élysées of working-class Brownsville. Mm-hmm. It's where Abe Stark hit sign win suit fame had his haberdashery store, and Happy Felton, who is this rotund fellow who had the Knothole Gang show before ball Dodger games, where they would have some little league players come out there and throw the ball around, and they'd have a Dodger player judge who was the best of the three kids. So he was at the theater with Clyde King, who was a pitcher for the Dodgers, and Pee Wee Reese. So I got to go up on stage and ask a couple of questions, and I got a baseball forward. So that was quite a thrill. Uh-huh. So over the years, I've done quite a few Dodger figures. Among the most prominent would be Pee Wee Reese, Duke Snider, and more recently Don Newcomb.
I mean,
it gives me sadness to see their passing, as would with anybody who is a prominent figure and deserved to get to have their life memorialized.
I was just going to say, I mean, certainly for myself as a fan, when I come across someone who I used to follow, like when Ed Charles passed away, when Tommy Agee passed away, mm-hmm. and these weren't really old men at the time, and these are the people, because I have a connection with them, it makes me really feel old. Because these players of my youth, the people I used to watch and enjoy, are departing.
Yeah, I mean, every year one gets older, and the players stay the same age, so to speak. The active players.
Well, what about how shall I phrase this? Who is the youngest ball player obituary you ever wrote? I mean, certainly we lost a member of the California, Los Angeles Angels recently. Died way too young in his mid-20s. I mean, that's especially hard-hitting.
I tell you, it's hard for me to say, because generally if an athlete dies young, it's connection with an accident. Mm-hmm. sudden illness, and it's treated as a news story
right.
rather than an obituary like, Tyler Skaggs.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
He was found dead in a hotel room when the Angels were on a road trip, and that was a news story rather than obituary. Because also with a lot of these the younger figures, their careers aren't wholly formed.
Sure.
So the circumstances of their death are of equal weight, perhaps, with their accomplishments at that point.
Now, some obituaries, like for the major figures, like a Joe DiMaggio or Mickey Mantle, that's going to be on page one of the Times, somewhere on page one. It's going to start on page one. Then there are people who pass away who get what we call reefers, which refers them to an interior page, and some just start inside the paper. I guess it's a pecking order as to the decision on who goes where?
Yeah, well, that would be a decision. When it's on the obituary page solely, that would be a decision of the obituary's editor.
Mm-hmm.
For page one, that would be a joint decision between the editor of the paper as a whole in consultation with the obituary editor and other editors.
Now, you mentioned your affinity for the Dodgers before. You wrote a book about the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's called Superstars and Screwballs, 100 Years of Brooklyn Baseball, which it takes the history of the franchise from the history of baseball in the borough of Brooklyn itself from the late 1850s when amateur teams were being formed, the Atlantics, the Eckfords are two that come to mind. Until the Brooklyn Dodgers last year in baseball, but I also talk about the Negro leagues. There was a team called the Brooklyn Brown Dodgers in 1945, which was really kind of a smokescreen for Branch Rickey. He was looking for a candidate to break the color line to see if there were any prospects that he could assemble on a team that would. Would not be known generally that was the purpose of the team, was to look for a candidate. Of course, Jackie Robinson did not play for that team, of course. Also, the Bushwicks, which was a semi-pro team that had a lot of good ball players, played in the 1930s. And the Federal League that had a team that was known, perhaps informally, as the Brooklyn Tip Tops, I think because they were owned by the Tip Top White Bread Company.
So
it's mostly on the Dodgers, but it also includes the other teams in Brooklyn and throws in some information about Brooklyn history as a whole.
And do I recall you also wrote a book about baseball during the war?
Yeah, that was the first book I wrote. It's called Spartan Seasons, How Baseball Survived the Second World War. It talks about the impact on the game, the shortages of materials, travel difficulties, and of course, most importantly, the loss of so many players to military service. So the game carried on all through the war, but increasingly the teams were relying on players who were 4F deferment from war service for injuries. Or other conditions that would not preclude them from playing baseball, but would preclude them from being taken by the armed forces, and also with players who were too old for the draft or too young. So I talked about that, and also something about when the players came back from the war, how they were treated. You know, there was a law saying that you had to give somebody a good chance to get back their old job, and there had to be really a specific reason why they couldn't do it anymore to not take them back. And it was kind of iffy in terms of baseball. I think they pretty much skirted that. I mean, if you came back in spring training and you had lost too much from being away in the service, they didn't really get much special consideration. You know, they either had to retire, go to another team, or go back to the minor leagues.
That always fascinated me. It's remarkable that people like Ted Williams or Hank Greenberg or Bob Feller were able to, you know, lose so many years, so many prime years, and yet still be able to come back.
Yeah, that's true. Bob Feller actually went into the service the day after Pearl Harbor Sunday and volunteered for the Navy, and he... he played for a while on a military baseball team. You know, the admirals and generals vied with each other to get the best major league players in the service to play for the service teams. Fellow did not want to. He played a bit, but then he wanted. He said he wanted overseas duty, and he became a gunner on the battleship Alabama in the Pacific Theater.
And of course,
and there were others. A fellow named Cecil Travis, who was an outstanding infielder with the Washington Senators, suffered frozen feet in the Battle of the Bulge, and never could. He came back and played, but he never could retain his form.
And Bert Shepard?
And Bert Shepard is an interesting story. He lost a leg in World War II, and he was a baseball prospect before that. And he was discharged in 1945, and the Senators gave him a chance to pitch in one game with them. That season, so it was quite a remarkable personal story.
And you've also written a couple of non-baseball books.
Yeah, I did a book on Ivy League football. I called Ivy League Autumns, and I've done a couple of books on connection with World War II. A book on the 50th anniversary of D-Day. And most recently, a book about life in New York City during World War II, titled Hell of a Town, from the song from the musical On the Town, the three sailors on leave and making the most of their 24 hours in New York.
Now, I remember Hell of a Town. It's fascinating.
It's obviously a great show. It's been reprised many times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, journalism is your main profession, but when you're writing books, do you enjoy that as much as writing? Do you find it more difficult? Is it an escape from your daily job?
It's different, certainly. You're writing on deadline, or else you're writing pieces, even if they're advances. Usually they're limited to 1,000 words or so. I mean, in some instances, when it's a very major figure, more than that. But in baseball, of course, in writing books, you can stretch things out. So they both have appealing aspects to me.
Mm-hmm. And we've been talking with Richard Goldstein, one of the obituary writers in the New York Times, specializing in baseball figures and author. Richard, I want to thank you very much for talking with us today.
Well, thanks very much, Ron. I appreciate the opportunity.
And that was our conversation with Richard Goldstein. So if you're a baseball fan of a certain age, and unfortunately some of your heroes are leaving us these days, check in the Times and see who's written the obituary. And more often than not, I think you'll find it's Richard Goldstein. That concludes this Bookshelf Conversation. Please come back next time when we'll have another fascinating guest from the world of baseball pop culture. In the meantime, don't forget to visit Ron Kaplan's BaseballBookshelf.com for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews on our favorite sport. If you have a question or comment, please send them to me at ronkaplan's baseball bookshelf@gmail.com. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.